Welcome and thank you for joining us for this session on proactive project management with Visual Studio 2010. I'm Sean McBreen, I'm the Senior Director for Visual Studio Product Management, and today I'm here to talk to you about one of the things that makes software development so challenging but also so exciting. Software development's this great mixture of both engineering and art form. But unlike other engineering disciplines, one of the things that really differentiates software is the fact that the economics of, say, civil engineering really dictate that the safest and most productive way to do projects is to do the same thing over and over again. Therefore, most construction projects are certainly modelled almost exactly after previous projects. However, the economics of software development is almost exactly the opposite. The truth is that most software projects are unique in a number of ways. The reason for that is if you were doing something that had been done before, you'd probably be buying packaged off-the-shelf software or reusing community code. Those sorts of projects that are doing the same things before just don't get funded today. And of course, projects are also challenging because they bring together a whole number of disciplines across one project team. Project managers, business analysts, testers, and developers. And in Visual Studio 2010, we do a huge amount of work to streamline the flow of information across all of those roles inside a project to help drive up predictability of delivery and to help improve the impact of the entire team. But of course, one of the key roles in this is the project manager. And the project manager's job is to keep the train on the tracks, to make sure that the project delivers on time and above customers' expectations. And it's a tricky job. It's both tricky for the project manager, who doesn't want to impact the team as they're getting the work done, but it's also tricky for the people on the team who want to keep focused on the tasks they're charged with rather than continuously updating a set of project plans. And the truth is, how many projects that we've all been involved in where process is layered on at the end of a cycle in a search for extra visibility, and all it does is thrash the team and take them away from the most important tasks at hand, that of delivering customer value to the delivering value on the product. And just as a little bit of further context, it's true to say that the most effective project teams are happy teams. And having a happy software team is not a magical thing. It's actually pretty simple. Happy teams are about happy individuals. And happy individuals are based upon teams that are founded upon trust, clear visibility, and great communication. Team members want to know what's coming next and how the work they're doing fits into the overall scheme of the project. They don't want to be surprised by having to work late nights and long weekends, and they want to stay focused on delivering that extra bit of value for the customer. On the other side, of course, the project manager's job is not to manage the project, but to keep it in great shape and to make the team as happy in a productive place as possible. Somehow along the way, sometimes projects have deviated from this. Too often, project management itself is a painful experience for everyone across the team. The project manager is always searching for a degree of visibility and clarity they just can't find without interrupting every person in the team. And of course, the individuals are trying their hardest to work on that feature or piece of code and are constantly getting interrupted or blocked by other members of the team. And part of this comes from the fact that project schedules are solved and created by people who are separate from the actual project themselves, who have an idea of what the resources in the project should theoretically be capable of doing, but don't really have a true understanding of what the project itself is meant to deliver and the nuances of the user stories or characteristics of the specific project. And a lot of this comes down to the fact that traditional project planning is about dealing with resources, not individuals and peoples. And the software development industry has been thinking about this for quite some time. And in the Agile Manifesto, it laid out four key principles to try and change the way that we think about delivering software. Wouldn't it be better to be focusing on individuals and the work styles that they have over rigidly adhering to set processes? Wouldn't it be better to focus on creating working software rather than creating reams of documentation that may or may not be used and certainly will become dated over time? Shouldn't we focus on collaborating with the end customer, whether they be an external user or an internal customer, rather than negotiating which features will and won't make the cut and focusing on contract negotiations? And shouldn't we be able to deal with the inevitability of change in the plan rather than adhering to a rigid plan that's set out at the front while we didn't fully understand the scope or constraints of the project? Well, many of you are probably dealing with these exact challenges and trying to embrace these principles inside your own projects. And certainly at Microsoft, as we've been building out Visual Studio and Visual Studio Team Foundation Server, we've been working to embed these principles deeply inside the product that we work as well. Now, these agile principles, I think we can all agree, apply to projects no matter what process you're using, whether it be a waterfall system, a CMMI-based project, or some other process altogether. I think it's fair to say that we all want to focus on delivering end customer value and great software for the users. So how do you go about making sure that you can embed these principles into the way that you work as a whole collective team? How can you, even in the framework of a much larger process that's operating inside your organization, insulate your part of the team so that you can be as productive and as predictable as possible? Well, the way to do that is through having great tools that enable you to adapt to all of these challenges. In the earlier releases of Visual Studio, 2005 and 2008, we went a long way to work on providing transparency across the whole project team with a transparent backlog of project work and a work item infrastructure. We also went a long way to incorporate those work items into the day-to-day activity that the developers and the rest of the teams did, so that when you checked in code, you would associate it with the work items that you'd completed. It's this simple tying together of the work items and the requirements of the project to the code and the work that a developer does or the builds that are run that enables us to start to auto-generate reports that give great insight into the project, to take the guesswork away from managing a project. And of course, we've done a huge amount of that leading up to this point, and in 2010 we've done much, much more to help you get even more effective as a team. So today, I want to talk about three things that Visual Studio 2010 will help you in terms of managing and working inside of projects. How can we help you plan with confidence through lightweight tools that allow you to quickly iterate through a plan and deal with the realities of the team? How can we help you plan, run the actual project with much greater visibility so that ahead of time you can see what's wrong with your project and understand if you're on track? And so the entire team becomes vested in the entire outcome of the project rather than just the component part that they're working on. And of course, once some issue does happen or some great success happens, what sort of tools can we give you to enable you to work through what actually led up to that point so you can start diagnosing the root cause of issues or the root cause of success and adapt to those in future iterations of your project? So, hopefully today we've got a relatively demo-heavy presentation that will give you an idea of how we achieve these things in Visual Studio 2010. Let's start off with the ability to plan projects with confidence. So, planning is a hard activity. No matter how you look at it, when you're dealing with a software project that hasn't been created before, estimates are a best guess. Even if they're the collective best guess of a set of experts, one of the things that's great in the agile processes is the suggestion of planning poker, where you get a group of great people in the room to work out how hard they think the relative effort of any one user story will be. It's these sort of practices that enable you to get better precision and better relative estimates of the actual tasks that you're going to work through. However, it's still hard, and it's still very hard to predict what will be required to complete a set of activities. There's external changes that will happen, changes in functionality, and certainly when you're normally doing the estimates, you just don't know everything about the project that's going to go ahead. The other common mistake is you just don't plan for, you don't manage to accrue or account for planned interruptions, whether it be holidays, people in the team who are going away at an individual level, or whether it be some sort of event that will stop the team being as productive as possible. And last but not least, too often you forget to think of people as individuals, and not every developer has the same capacity to complete work at the same rate. So, in Visual Studio 2010, straight out of the box with Team Foundation Server, we have the MSF for Agile planning work planning template, and that has two workbooks, two Excel workbooks, to really help you plan out your projects effectively. These include baked-in best practices and a link directly into Team Foundation Server at the back end. The first of the two workbooks allows you to do very coarse-grained planning, to establish your base assumptions about what is possible in a particular iteration for the project. It allows you to work out the top-level user stories that you need to work through, prioritize those, and start to do relative stack ranking and relative estimates of the effort related to those things. Once you've done that, you can start mapping those out to the individual iterations, and you can do this by comparing your ability to execute in a previous iteration versus your plan for the next iteration. How often has a project manager or someone in the team assumed that you're going to get far more productive every single iteration inside a project, only to find that that is not the case? Reports like this let you hit those issues straight up front. The second workbook allows you to drop into the actual iteration and start planning at a more granular, task-based level. So you know which user stories you're going to work on so you can deliver some end-to-end value to the customer in an iteration. And this allows you to start allocating those individual tasks out to people on the team, account for their particular performance characteristics and availability, and also start to workload balance across the team so that you can see how much of the backlog can actually be hit within this one work iteration. So with that, why don't we actually jump to the demo and show you how this all hangs together. So let's see what these agile workbooks are capable of. Here I have in front of me open Visual Studio 2010 Ultimate, which is directly connected to Team Foundation Server on the back end. And I'm going to open up the Team Explorer, I'll pin this out, and in this demo I'm working against the Blue Yonder website, which is the website that we've used for all of the launch demos. And it's a website focused on a travel booking system. But I'm quite early in the process, and I'm going to be doing some planning around Blue Yonder. So what you see here is the Team Explorer, and I'm going to open up the Documents folder here. The Documents folder is connected to a SharePoint document repository. I'm going to expand out Shared Documents, and you'll see the Plot Product Planning Excel workbook here. I right-click and edit that. I'll trust it. It's a macro-enabled workbook. And what you've seen come up here is a very simple workbook that enables me to start planning the user stories for my project. It's directly integrated to Excel, so you can quickly bulk update tasks for the Team Foundation server and work with it just like so many teams do today in Excel in a natural way. It has a Team tab here that enables me to connect and work with Team Foundation server. To save on typing in this demonstration, what I'm going to do is I'm going to grab a text file here and enter in three work items I have. I'm going to quickly enter those in here, and what I can do is if I expand out the title row, you'll see I have three user stories. As a customer, I want to search for vacation packages. As a partner, I want to create new promotion offerings, and as a customer, I want to be able to purchase a new vacation package. Now what I want to do is quickly publish those work items straight out to TFS. I can just hit publish here, and you'll see that this ID column on the left-hand side will instantly update, and those are now stored on TFS. So now let's do some planning around the iterations. Here you can see directly embedded into the spreadsheet itself is a lot of help information to help you be successful in using the spreadsheet. What I'll do is I'll select the area of the project I'm working on, which is vacation bookings, and I'm going to enter some information about the particular iteration I want to focus on. Again, I'll just quickly grab these from my text file. So what I'm doing here at the moment is creating two-week iterations. And I'm allocating each iteration to have two project members included in them. And quickly, you can see it's got the number of days accounted for. It does all this working for you. Now, I know that during this period of time, I have some holidays or interruptions. And so right now, I can start dealing with those assumptions. And in fact, one of them is a team offsite, which I know will take my team away from the project for a few days. So let's quickly paste that in here. And what you'll see, if I go back to the iterations tab, is actually straight away the number of days available in this first iteration has been reduced by one. That's to make sure that the product is already taking care of the fact that there's some time away. Now, if I go back to the product backlog, I actually want to start allocating some of the story points and stories to iterations. It's all in Excel, so there's drop-down lists. In fact, I'm going to add all of these to it. I'm actually going to hit Control-D, so all the shortcuts you're used to in Excel will work here. And now if I go back to the iterations page, I'll see that I have 10 story points allocated to iteration 1. Now, if I was in my second iteration, I could actually be comparing the work that was created in a past iteration. But you can quickly see how I can allocate story points across iterations to ensure that I'm planning based on yesterday's weather. So, I've achieved all these things. I'm actually going to publish these changes back out to Team Foundation Server, and I'll close it. So in the last few minutes, what you saw me do was open an Excel workbook that enabled me to start doing my coarse grain planning. The user stories, aka the sort of requirements level planning, not breaking into individual subtasks, but with best estimates, that's the story points, and mapping those against iterations. Iterations based on the real constraints of the team, and iterations that I can plan based upon the performance, historical performance. So now that I've done that, why don't we actually plan out an individual iteration? These are the sort of things you'd do in a daily Scrum meeting. If it was Scrum, so once again, I'm going to trust this workbook. I've opened up iteration one inside Team Explorer shared documents, and here I find a spreadsheet where, again, I can click to the team tag, I can refresh this report, and instantly I get the three user stories that you just saw me add into the system appear here. What I want to do is I'm going to add four childs to this. And here you see actually one of the great new features in Team Foundation Server 2010 is the ability to easily create hierarchical relationships between user stories and individual subtasks. In fact, all work items can have complex hierarchical information. And I'll be talking about that and doing a quick demonstration of that later on. In this case, what this enables me to do is add in a number of sub-activities to those user stories. And this one is about creating a new promotion offering on the website. And what I'm going to say is I need to create a table in the database, and we're using a model view controller design pattern here. And so I need to create a model, a view, and a controller to access this data. At the moment, all of these tasks are allocated out to April Stewart, who's our dev lead. So that's great. I want to set a few settings down for the project. I'm going to say, in this case, I'm working on vacation bookings, promotions. I'm in iteration one, and I need to enter the details of the iteration timing. So I'll just quickly enter this time details into the spreadsheet, again, saving myself some error-prone input. And again, I want to start planning for interruptions. And this time I get additional options for interruptions. First, I'll enter in the team offsite that we talked about before. But now I'm going to start planning for individuals in the team. How often have any of us been inside a project team where people who have training, in this case, haven't been able to go on it? And that's just poor planning. It's not taking that into account in the beginning of the schedule as one of the constraints for the project. How many of us have had to delay holidays or not go on holidays? This really does help address a lot of those things. So Abu, in this case, has some training. April, who is actually the dev lead, wants him to do that. He wants to keep on building up his skill level. So now I'm going to flip to the capacity view. And this is a great view in the spreadsheet here that lets you see, well, what's our total team capacity and how are we mapping that to individuals? Now, at the moment, the bar is all showing red for obvious reasons. I haven't started to plan and map activity out to individuals. So let's start doing that. I'm going to quickly take the details around Abu and April and input them into the spreadsheet. Now, I know that I'm copying and pasting all of these, but you'll notice that all the data entry is standard list boxes. It's very easy to enter this data. And right away, you'll see that a couple of things happened. I've actually said that Abu is capable of doing about 6 hours of development in a day. I'm actually planning that he's allowed to have a lunch period. I'm actually planning that he's a senior dev and quite capable of his job. April, on the other hand, who's the team lead, only has 5 hours a day that she's working on the project. Could be many reasons for this. In this case, it's because she has other commitments, being a dev lead, that she has to focus on throughout the project timeline. Now, even though Abu has additional capacity, you notice his total capacity is lower than April. Why is that? He's going on a training course. So all of this has been taken account of by the system automatically. I haven't had to do anything, but it's really joining all these dots up together for me. Now, the graph above show that actually the team has the capacity to do all of the planned work for the iteration. That's great news. However, you can see that April is severely overcommitted in the work that she's working on, and you can see that Abu is actually completely free. So what we want to do now is we want to actually start going back to the backlog and re-workload balancing for the team. So one thing we could do is we could say, well, this build model for the promo web, why don't we give this task to Abu, and maybe that will rebalance so that April has enough time. Quickly flick back to capacity, that hasn't been quite enough. You can imagine in a big team, this ability to do these changes, flick back and forth in real time, is a huge time saver. You can quickly visualize what is actually happening. So this time, I'm going to shift the create table function to Abu, and put April back on the other one, and I flip back to capacity, and we're looking in much, much better shape. So now I actually have additional capacity in the system. I could continue to take things off the backlog if I wanted to, but at this point in time, I'm just going to submit all these changes back to the server by hitting publish. And this has created all the relevant work items, allocated them to all of the users, included the estimate and remaining work information that you'd expect to come through the system. So let's close this, save it, and that's saving it back up to the SharePoint portal. And that ends the first demonstration where I've actually quickly showed you how with two planning workbooks you can do the coarse grain planning for the team, the rough initial estimates and work out how many iterations a project will take, and you can keep on learning from the success of the past, how many story points did you deliver in the last iteration would indicate how many you should aspire to for the next iteration. And then once you've worked out what was in an iteration, I showed you how you can quickly enter additional data, the actual task level data with hierarchical work items, and start doing some capacity planning across the team based on their real constraints and the ability to get the work done. So there you go, that gives you a great idea of how you can quickly plan based on the constraints of your team. But once a project starts, things change. And obviously these agile planning workbooks allow you to sit down in your regular stand-ups or other meetings and continue to plan throughout the entire project lifecycle to adapt to that. But to know what's changing, sometimes you need great visibility. And it's important to have visibility, not just at the level of just the individual, but across the team. This concept of a shared backlog has been very popularized by Scrum and allows you to see the forest for the trees. You can understand how your tasks relate to others and understand what's going on in the entire project itself. This enables you to... So the real way to continue to get visibility into a project isn't by running around asking people for updates all the time. That certainly is one way to do it. It certainly is the traditional way to do it. But what's great is if you can gather data throughout the entire project lifecycle in the context of what people are doing, stopping the jarring context switches of writing code, working on a hard algorithm, and being interrupted by someone else to give an update or to file a report. What you want is to keep on in context gather information so you get visibility of what everyone across the entire team is doing without having to interrupt them. And the truth is that tools should help you do that and not hinder that process. The other thing you need to get very successful here is to have a single source of the truth. You can't have differing views of how far you are in one part of the project for the other one. And work items are integrated to the entire life cycle in Visual Studio 2010. If you're a tester filing a bug, you associate that with work items and you create a special type of work item called a bug for that in itself. Work item statuses are updated with every single action. When you're checking in a piece of code, you're associating it to the work items that you've been working on. This gives you great traceability through the project, but also helps you understand. Instead of having to delve directly through the code to understand what someone was working on, you can look at the work items they were focused on. It gives you a great way to get additional high-level information out of the team. And of course, having these work items integrated in the place ensures that you all have automatic reporting. Far fewer interruptions to the team, far more granular reporting with everyone's participation. Not just a subset of the team, but everyone in real time, all the time. So now that you have all of this data, how do you start to connect the dots together? How do you understand what's going on? Well, one of the things that we've really focused on in Visual Studio 2010 is to have relationships, full structured relationships for work items, predecessor, dependency relationships, that improve traceability, but also help you understand blocking issues inside a team and help the team inform you what's actually going on across the project. The other thing is that work items are available everywhere through Visual Studio 2010. You work where you want to work, whether it be in the web browser, whether it be inside the Eclipse IDE for Team Explorer everywhere, whether it be directly inside Visual Studio or inside Visual Studio Test Professional, our testing tool, MS Project for project managers. The fact is that every single member of the team are working on the same set of data that helps you understand exactly where the project is at any point in time. So let's have a quick look at how you can stay in context when you're working with work items and some of the great features for helping developers quickly document where they are in the process. So here I am back in Visual Studio, And in this demonstration, I'm going to be swapping hats between April, the development lead, and Abu, who's the developer inside the project, to help you understand how work items can be really used to effectively work across the project. One of the nice things with Team Foundation Server is you have a project portal, which is based upon SharePoint. In this case, I'm using SharePoint Server, but you can also use SharePoint Foundation Services or Windows SharePoint Services, and they're installed straight out of the box with Team Foundation Server. So what's happening here is it's quickly loading up the portal site for the team. Can I stop that? I'll just start this demo again. I just don't want to have all that weight of the... Let's warm it up. Great. Okay, I'm going to start again. So now we're going to show how you can really stay in context as a developer or as a team lead, stay focused on the work you want, but still give the information you need to run the project. I'm going to be switching hats between April, the dev lead in this demonstration, and Abu, the actual individual developer. And I'm actually going to start off, even though I'm in Visual Studio here, I'm going to quickly drop out to the project portal, which is included with Team Foundation Server. This is built upon, in this case, SharePoint Server, and you can see a dashboard. I'm going to come back to those. But it also runs directly on SharePoint Foundation Services or Windows SharePoint Services. And here you see in my dashboard, which is in both versions of this, and you see the task here, create promotions table and database that was actually allocated to me in the last demo. I'm working here as Abu. So I'm going to quickly double-click on that. And what that's going to bring up is the Team Explorer web access client and enables me to work with my work item directly in a web browser here. I could be on or off-site doing this. I'm going to look at all links, and here you see the parent relationship between the user story and the table that I have to create. Now, this task has been allocated to me as Abu, and I've realized that actually I need to add a relationship to this. I need to add a predecessor activity to this, because the reality is that the site that we're working on is a model view controller site. And before I start actually building the table, I should do the work on the model first. So what I'm going to do here is I can quickly go into the iteration one active tasks, run a query, shows all the tasks here, and I'm just going to select the model here. And now what's happening is I'm creating a relationship. You can see the model task here. I can load that straight up and find out about it. But I'm creating a relationship between the model, the need to create the model, and the table as well. So I'm just going to say need the model first. And I have sticky keys on, but let's see if I can get out of that. Need the model first. And I'll click OK. Sticky keys, great thing. And basically that's created this relationship here, and I'm going to save and close that. And what I'm now going to do is I'm going to run back, I'll close these other windows I created with the Windows E. I'm going to run back into Visual Studio, and actually now I'm in Visual Studio, I'm just for the sake of this demo going to create a new work item, and it's an issue. I'm going to let the team know that I've got a risk here, that Abu is blocked on doing the table. And I'm going to say that that this is based in the vacation bookings promotions area, sorry, of the site. And I'm going to say that this is based on iteration 1. This is a stack ranker 1 and a priority 1. So it shows right up at the top of the reports. And I'm going to say April should do some work. Sort of ironic, I'm managing up to, I guess, my manager, the dev lead here. But I'm just being clear that there's some stuff to do. And do you know what? I think now that I've made that clear, I might go to lunch. So Abu's gone off to lunch. April was actually at her PC, and she's seen a new issue come through the system that basically says, hey, look, Abu is blocked. What can we do about that? Well, let's go back into the documents. Let's go back into the iteration backlog worksheet. What I'm going to try and do as April now is quickly rebalance the work across the team and work out if I can unblock Abu and still get things back on track. And you might have a bit of a surprise waiting for him when he comes back from lunch. So I can see that actually Abu does have some capacity. So why don't I just have a look at the iteration backlog and see if I can do some work on this. Well, now that I know that I need the model before I do the table, I can probably change some of the estimates here as well. The table is going to be simpler to do, but the model will probably take a little bit more time in model-driven development. Why don't I give Abu the actual task of building out the model as well as the table? So quickly again, I'll flick back to capacity. He's at full capacity there. I know he's going on leave. I've got a bit of space as well. So why don't I actually give myself the create the promotions database table? Here we go as I go back to the capacity view. That seems fine. So now what I can quickly do, that's all working. Let me synchronize this through the team tab back to the server. So what I've quickly done while Abu was at lunch, as I've understood his complaint or his concern that the dependency wasn't fully recognized in the plan, but I've reacted to that and I've managed to actually give him the task that he probably can work on. So I'm now Abu coming back from lunch, straight into Visual Studio. Well, I'm sort of blocked at the moment. There's not a lot for me to do. What can I do? Well, let me quickly go to the My Tasks view and look. Here I do. I have the model that was just allocated to me straight through the Excel planning workbook. Very easy for April to allocate that to me. And now I know, well, it's my turn to do this bit of work. So just in terms of keeping this flying pretty quickly, I'm going to do something quite magical. Abu is going to finish his task almost instantly. Fast forward 2 days of non-stop work, which would not be what we were planning to do. And he's going to say finished. He'll mark it from active to closed, and I think he can save that. And now he himself is like, again, I'm sort of wondering what I have to do. I refresh and I've got no tasks left. Well, let's quickly open up the Team Explorer. And this time what he can do in the iteration itself is he can click on active tasks and he can see the tasks that are still active in the system. And what he's actually going to do is he's going to say, well, it's probably time for me to quickly change some of the priorities here. So, I'm going to quickly open up the stack rank setting for build the model view controller for promotion web. I'll change that to a stack rank of 2 now that that's done. Creating the promotions table, that's probably priority 1. So I can start actually playing with the way that tasks are allocated inside the project as Abu. And now I can quickly refresh through the project list and you can see all those changes. If I was to go to the iteration backlog workbook, I'll see all those changes cascade back through into the iteration backlog. And that's an example of how the team themselves can start planning around the project. So with that quick demo, I really showed you how you can work across Visual Studio, the project portal, but really you can work anywhere you want to stay in context, focused on the task that you're focused on. Whether it be planning with at the Excel workbooks, whether it be developing in Visual Studio, whether it be looking at reports on the Team Foundation server, you can start manipulating the plan for the project so the plan is adapting in real time to the real constraints of the system. This sort of visibility across everything that's happened in the project let the team all be vested interests in the success of the project and let the team all be part of the planning process itself. Abu went off to lunch and when he came back he was straight back to being productive and April didn't have someone who was blocked. You can imagine in a geo-distributed environment that these sort of tools are just fantastic tools to keep the whole team running along. So now let's talk about what you need to do, what's possible with Visual Studio 2010 to review status and proactively react to what's going on in your project. So often as a project leader, or even someone working inside a project, you have to guess where you're up to in a project. Reporting is a requirement. You need to understand where you are at any given time and your chances for success. But it's tough, it's time-consuming, and frankly, it's often just distracting from the task at hand, which is fixing any problems as they're discovered or delivering additional value to the customer. When you need to collate data, it's also really hard to get access to it. Normally it's either locked in people's minds or it's distributed across a number of different systems. And certainly, even historically with Team Foundation Server, getting to the root data has been a hard thing to do where it's been stored in our data warehouse, but really locked away only with a few custom reports we had over top of it. And to get it at hand at that, although you could write against the OLAP data warehouse, you really had to be a fantastic analyst and know and have the relevant skills to do that, all taking you away from delivering value inside the iteration that you should be focusing on. So you shouldn't have to be an expert at analysing the data. You shouldn't have to understand how it all comes together. Out of the box, we can do a lot to help you. But when you want to go further, we should enable that as well. So in Visual Studio 2010, there's really three big ways to work with data. I can tell you that every single report inside Visual Studio 2010 of the out-of-the-box reports, the SQL Server Reporting Services reports, have been refreshed to deliver additional insight and make them more usable. At the same time, we've created a way to view multiple reports in one place to give you deep insight to how a project is going with SharePoint dashboards. These dashboards give you all the information you need to predict with how the project's going with some degree of certainty. And when you need to delve deeper to understand exactly what's happened or what is going to happen, we provide tools that allow you to connect Excel directly to the data warehouse. So one of the questions that, you know, we often get with people starting to work up inside these reports is, what exactly is the report trying to tell me to do? Well, the first thing we've done with the SQL Server reporting reports is to actually include a brief description of what the report is all about. We've also included other reports in the same category, so you can get a feel for related reports that will give you similar degrees of insight. We then explain at the row level detail what you should be seeing. And in this case, this report is telling you how you're going on completing a user story, have all the tests been run that relate to that, and are there any blocks in terms of additional bugs that exist than tests that haven't been run. So you start to get the information coming together to drive meaningful decisions. Additionally, at the bottom of every report, we include some information that helps you get insight from the report. What should this report be telling you? And we also give you the ability to click on a link here to tell you what a healthy report looks like and an unhealthy report looks like. Equally, we allow you to quickly understand what the parameters were when this report was run and when the report itself was run. This is super useful when you're looking at printed reports in, say, a team meeting, allowing you to understand exactly what was the time and state of the system during the report's run period. At the same time, many people want to dive deeper into the data. These static reports, these parameterized reports, are incredibly powerful, and they cover most of the things that you want to do out of the box. But what you do want at times is to delve deeper with a very flexible reporting tool that allows you to do rich customizations across the wealth of data in the warehouse. And the familiar experience that people are used to doing that in is Excel. And one of the advances that we've got in the product is the ability to just right-click, run a report in Excel, and you can get the richness of the data in the warehouse and start to dissect it directly inside a spreadsheet. I mentioned dashboards. These are great and easy access to hold team-wide reports. Everyone on the team can see these. Even clients, if you wanted to share them with them, can start to see where we are in the report. And they're based upon the familiar and effective collaboration platform of SharePoint. The reports themselves, things like you can either run with SharePoint Foundation, which will give you the My Dashboard, or with SharePoint Server, you get a set of additional dashboards. Things like project burndown reports and quality reports that really help you understand how the project's going. So here quickly you see a trendline-based burndown report, and here you can see a project health report. Let me take you through one of these in a little bit more detail so you get a feel for what's going on. So the report you've got here is the quality dashboard. And the first thing it's telling you here is, are we making progress on running the test plans? We have a number of test plans, how many of them have been run, and how many have been run successfully? And of course, builds. Are we trending to a point where most of our builds succeed? Are we converging to a reliable system for the continuous integration? Bug progress. Are we fixing bugs, or are they both, or are they just mounting up over time? And of course, what is the quality of our bug fixes? How often is a bug fixed but only be re-logged again as an existing bug? It's the trends in reports like these that allow you to instantly determine, is this product heading in a direction that makes me feel certain we can ship it? How often do you deliver all the functionality in the project but realize you haven't effectively tested the project to know if you've delivered the value the customer expects in a reliable way? These sort of reports combine a variety of sources of data to give you that end-to-end visibility. So let's actually jump into the tool and give you an idea of how these reports look in Visual Studio 2010. and just swap. Let's swap to the demo machine. So here we are again inside Visual Studio 2010, and of course I could decide to run a lot of these reports either directly inside the development environment, which I'm going to as a developer here, but also you can run them from directly inside the SharePoint portal. Once again, no jarring context switches. So let's just collapse a few of these items and actually just start to build out the report section. What I'm actually interested in at this point in time is one of the project management reports. I want to know how we're progressing on our user stories. So I'm going to double click on this. And what you see is a SharePoint Reporting Services report firing up here. And this report tells you all the things you'd expect. Here's the user stories that I created earlier in the demonstrations through the planning workbook. And you can see that we've completed one task. That was the 24-hour task that Abu completed earlier on in the demo. And you can see that that has been completed. You can also see within the report some of the rich information we're talking about. A description of the report itself, related reports. You can directly click on these here to drill deeper. But one of the things I particularly like is this link, how to use this report. And what you see directly in context here again is a report that comes straight out of the MSDN documentation. Our technical documentation team have done a great job here of explaining these reports. And what you do is, as you scroll through here, it tells you about the data that you expect to see in the report with really useful sort of graphical indicators of where you're looking at inside the report. It tells you about which user stories will and won't appear. And then it also really gets to helping you interpret the report. It tells you the questions the report would answer, what a healthy report would look like, potentially more important, what to look for an unhealthy report. So it's this sort of documentation that can get the team up to speed really quickly and take the power out of only one or two people's minds and let the whole team know what's happening. Let's just exit our full screen mode here. Back to Team Explorer. Oops, pin that down. So now I'm actually interested in running a slightly more complicated report this time. And I mentioned in the past that although we had these great SQL Server Reporting Services reports, one of the ones you just saw, and there's many of them straight out of the box, that sometimes people want a much richer set of reports. And so this time I'm actually going to go into Team Queries, and I'm going to say Active Tasks here in Iteration 1, and I actually want to do some analysis directly inside Excel of what's happened in Iteration 1. So what's happening here is it's actually connecting directly back to the OLAP cube and the data warehouse, and I've got a whole lot of options in terms of how I can build out a report. If I expand these out, you get an idea of the sorts of things you can choose and not choose to do. I'll just choose the basics here, and it's actually starting to compile up a real-time connected report to the server with pivot tables and graphs to help me delve into the data in a much more flexible and deeper way than just these parameterized reports would let you in the past. It starts off with a great table of contents here, and it also has inside the document itself links to further help. So here you can see things like the priority of tasks in the project, who tasks are individually assigned to, and you can start to filter much further down into the project itself to understand what's going on. So some of these tools are incredibly powerful, allowing you to do your own customizations to the reports and getting real access to the system and behind the scenes. So now that you've delved a little bit deeper into what was happening in your project, you probably really want to understand what you're going to do about it to not repeat the mistakes of the past, or as I said, you know, you could have found something that you did that was incredibly successful in the iteration. So one of the things we want to do is to do a retrospective of this iteration. So now we move to the point where we're closing down this iteration, but an important part of project management is learning from past mistakes or past successes. So I'm going to once again open up the shared documents. I'm going to open up documents, shared documents, and I'm going to go samples and templates and retrospectives. And we have a sample document of an iteration retrospective here. I'm just going to quickly open that up. It's just a Word document that's persisted into the SharePoint portal or SharePoint Foundation Services. And what you see here is just an example iteration retrospective, in particular for Woodgrove Bank in this example, the sort of version control information, what this document's trying to achieve, and then some examples of, you know, what happened in the iteration, what went well in the iteration, what did not go well in the iteration, and what are some of the areas for improvement for the project team. It's these sorts of reports, these lightweight reports, that are really at the core of helping teams improve. So let's quickly close that. And what I want to do is I'm going to create my own retrospective. So I'll open this document template, which is basically just the template for this document. And I will call it I1 retrospective. It would help if I edited. You can right click and click edit, which I've been doing in the other demos. So I'm going to say I1 retro, not a very informative name, and I'm going to name the project Blue Yonder. And I'm not going to fill in this report, but you get the idea that straight away you can easily create reports based upon templates that are inside the process guidance. You don't need to create these yourself. We provide them out of the box with examples of best practices. What I actually want to do is save this document so that the team can collaborate on it. So I'm going to save it as a doc, but I actually want to save it in the wiki for the team site. So I'm going to quickly just drop straight down, and we do have a team wiki, part of the functionality in SharePoint, and I will save it directly there. And as I close this, it will ask me to check in the document so other people can view it, and I'll say yes, that'll be great. And now if I was to go to the team wiki, and I'll just do that directly here, team wiki, you'll see this document. Iteration retrospective that I just saved up there. You'll also see it in the recently modified documents. And now the team themselves can start collaborating on this online inside SharePoint, working so that they all collectively learn how to make the process better and work collectively at managing the whole process. So in this quick demonstration, you've seen some of the great reporting tools that we have that work directly inside Visual Studio or inside a web browser, that start to give you end-to-end visibility across the entire project. We compose these reports into dashboards to give you real, meaningful, and actionable information so that you can diagnose and find problems early on and do something about them. If you need to go deeper, we provide great Excel-based reports where you can start digging through the data and find out exactly what's going on in the team. All of these things are designed so that the mere mortal can find out what's going across the happening in the team in real time, and that the project itself can be a much more predictable experience. So let's switch back to the slides. So as I started off with the point, software development is an incredible industry to be within. It's so rare to have an industry where the actual underlying technology moves so fast, and we are constantly getting the opportunity to do something new. But with that, managing projects can be tough. Planning, estimating, and getting a happy team together are some of the most important recipes for success in software development. I've tried to show you over the course of the last sort of 50 minutes, what Visual Studio 2010 does to help you in this process. To plan projects with confidence based on the realities of the team and the past performance of the team. How you can run projects with much improved visibility so the whole team is vested in its success and the whole team can help you spot issues early on. And of course, any issues that are discovered, what can you do about diagnosing them and digging through the data to absolutely understand the root cause and deal with it and react to keep that project delivering on time and above customer expectation? Visual Studio 2010 is a massive release for us at Microsoft. We've worked on it for many years, and our biggest focus has been to streamline the flow of information across the entire team to ensure that the team is as productive as possible, eliminating waste wherever possible in the project lifecycle. I hope you can see just some of the advances we've made for project management here, and throughout the other launch sessions, you've seen what we've done to bring testers into the lifecycle, and how even these features for project management we've tried to bring to everyone with the ability for Team Foundation Server, which is the backbone of this collaboration platform, to run on any piece of hardware, from a desktop to a server. For teams of two, I might demo today, to teams of thousands, like our own teams at Microsoft, who depend on this product every day to build and ship the software that you're using. Thank you very much for listening to us, and I hope you have a fantastic time with Visual Studio 2010. Please get out there today and try the product. We know that you will enjoy using it. Thank you.